Welcome to Midlife Bites. This is the podcast that tells the truth about how midlife bites, why it bites, and what happens after it bites. I'm Kirsten Bowes, clinical psychologist, midlife mentor, and someone who believes midlife isn't a crisis. Well, maybe it is a bit. At the very least, it's a reckoning. But it's also an invitation to your reclamation. Here you'll find real talk, real stories, and the kind of conversations that make you feel less alone and more like yourself. And heads up, I get a little bit sweary sometimes, so tune in if you do too, or at least don't get offended if you hear a few choice words. Sometimes it's just me, sometimes it's me chatting with a guest, but either way, it's always going to be raw, relatable, and real. Hey everyone, it's Kirsten here, and this is Midlife Bites, where we talk about the real, messy, beautiful parts of midlife that do not get enough airtime. And today's bite is about grief, not the kind that follows a funeral or a trip to family court, but the kind that shows up quietly when life is asking us to change. And this is the kind that rears its head quite often inside periods of transition. Now, admittedly, I have gone rogue because this was not meant to be episode 4's topic, but it's come up for me personally and got me thinking. Not that it hasn't come up before. It's certainly come up before in my life and quite often actually during the perimenopausal transition that went on for a very long time. No surprises there. So it's not new, but I guess it's interesting to me that it's come up again and I am yet again having to remind myself of certain things that are helpful when faced with this kind of grief. Before I launch in, let's just kind of acknowledge that for most people, when they think of grief, they think of endings. But grief also arrives with beginnings. And I want you to kind of hang on to this thread. We'll do quite a bit of a segue, but we will come back to this concept of beginnings by the end of the episode. But nonetheless, every big transition, whether it's getting a new job, kids leaving home, perimenopause, all of those experiences and more ask us to let go of something. And letting go of good things in particular hurts. And the menopausal transition is just full of them. There's lots of things that we have to let go of physically, psychologically, emotionally, and spiritually. And that's because, and I know you've heard me bang on about this again and again, and I will continue to do so, but it's because perimenopause actually really reorganizes us from the inside out. We're not who we were, and yet we're also not yet who we're becoming. It's an in-between space. It's a liminal space. It's a limbo. And it's in that space in particular where grief hangs out. So back to why this has come up for me. And it's going to sound potentially trivial, but perhaps you'll understand why it's not so trivial for me. So I've recently had to make the decision to stop lifting. And by that, I mean I've had to stop going to my training where I do strength training, progressive, heavy lifting, that kind of thing. And I've had to stop that because despite as much input as I have had from physios, pain specialists, from my trainer, doing all the things that I was advised to do, I have just found that I am experiencing too much pain when I'm lifting, even when I really, 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 really pulled back and really dropped my weights and reduced the frequency I was going and all the rest, I was still finding that I was experiencing pain. Now, this isn't a conversation about pain, but I will add that I have now got what's happening, I guess, is this real clear neural patterning of pain. My body anticipates it, expects it, and creates it. So I'm getting some support with that for sure. But nonetheless, I've had to step back and I don't know. It feels kind of permanent. Logically, I'm trying to tell myself it's not, because there's hope with some treatments that I'm going to try next year, procedures and things. But at the moment, it feels like I'm really having to stop something I love. And that something that I loved had kind of become a part of who I was. And so this isn't just about not being able to do this thing anymore, at least not in the way I had been and with the community that I had been doing this with, because that's the other thing. The community at this lifting place is amazing. And I'm super sad that I can't be a part of it. But it is actually ultimately about grieving something that was part of who I was, part of my identity. And it is, as I said before, just one example of things I've grieved over the past decade since beginning perimenopause and now being menopausal. And I can't imagine any midlife woman who wouldn't be able to think of things that she's grieved, particularly at this stage of her life, and particularly as it relates to parts of herself, because it's just such a dominant feature is losing parts of yourself. Hang in there. We'll get to the beginnings bit in a minute. Well, not in a minute, by the end. Ultimately, it's just an integral part of the menopausal transition. We know that it's as much a psychological transition as a biological one. It's a spiritual transition. It's so much more than hormones, so much bigger than just the physical changes and experiences that we have. And because of that, just change in itself, always with change, comes transition. Those two things go hand in hand. You know, when we become parents, we lose the freedom of pre-kids life. When we change careers, we lose the familiarity of the old one. When we enter menopause, perimenopause in particular, we find ourselves losing a sense of ourselves due to the changes we experience on a physical, cognitive, psychological, and spiritual level, as I've said. And these are the things that make us us. And our identities are built around them. Being someone who lifted heavy, and that was well before it became trendy to do so, was part of who I was. And not only that, it was part of who I wanted to continue to be. And that's actually quite the kicker. I saw this part of me as something that I would be able to continue to express and experience. But I do have to, and we need to, embrace the truth. And that truth is that grief is part and parcel of life. And it's actually part and parcel of this transition. It's not a glitch. It's not that we're doing anything wrong. It's actually just a really critical and unavoidable process and part of the process. Now, grief has been looked at in lots of different ways over the years, which, you know, is because it is such a human experience. And for a long, long time, we were told that it came in five tidy stages. Those were denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance, which kind of gave the impression that it was this nice linear. You first are in denial, and then you move into anger, and then you bargain, and then you become depressed, and then you accept. Like, it just really sounded tidy, right? And it was groundbreaking. It was a groundbreaking model of grieving, and it opened so many conversations and ongoing research. And it's that ongoing research that actually started to tell us it's a different story. It's that model doesn't nail it. And so what we know now is that modern grief theory and people like Margaret Strobe and Henk Schut, they talk about this dual process model. And when they talk about that, what they're referring to is that we oscillate, we move between two modes. And those modes are focusing on loss, feeling the absence, remembering and missing, And then the other mode is what they would call the restoration mode or orientation, where we're adapting, rebuilding, and re-engaging. And that what's normal is that we swing and move between them, so that feeling sad and grieving at one moment or one day, and then feeling okay and future focus the next day, and then doing many iterations of that, is actually really appropriate and normal. It's actually movement. It's not regression. And there's also other theories by Klass, Silverman, and Nickman, and that's of continuing bonds. And this is where we've learned that people who grieve and grieve well, which is an interesting phrase in itself, but part of what they do is they don't cut ties with who's gone or what's gone. They integrate it. They find ways to learn to live with it in new ways. So it's less about getting over and more about carrying forward what it is that has been lost. So when we're thinking about this in terms of not losing a loved one, although what I'm going to say is, when we think about loss as a former version of ourselves, which is hopefully a loved one, but not necessarily the one we usually think of, it's not about forgetting her. It's not about forgetting that past version of ourselves. It's about honoring that past version of ourselves, figuring out how she still lives in us, how we can still express her in some way, even as we change. And this is this critical kind of identity work, because this is what we're talking about. We're talking about losing identities, whether they be partly because we're losing capacities that were very much part of our identity, or roles that were part of our identity. These are anchors. These are very grounding for us. So if your worth came from being productive, sharp, energetic, or strong, well, if you're listening, I'm pretty sure you know and have probably experienced perimenopause has shaken a lot of those things. And if that's the case, it's probably really shaken your sense of self. That's identity grief, the grief of no longer recognizing yourself, the grief of it's the who am I if I'm not fill in the blank, that woman anymore feeling. It's one of the most common things that we all hear who work in this space. I don't feel like myself anymore. I don't recognize myself anymore. That's loss, and it generates a grief response. Perimenopause, or the menopausal transition, kind of just dismantles these old identities. You know, the achiever who could push through anything, the carer who always had the bandwidth, the woman who knew her body, the woman who could spin the plates and juggle the balls and just get shit done. All of those start to blur. Maybe they also start to disappear. And what moves in its place, or what evolves and grows in its place, can take some time to really take shape and be visible, be tangible, be felt clearly. And because of that, the in-between, that liminal, no longer, not yet phase, it's uncomfortable, but it is where truth gathers. And that truth is that loss and growth arrive together, but that they both overlap and take time to be clear. And that's something I've really had to remind myself of recently. So how do we get there? How do we move towards acceptance? How of what we have lost, and maybe even before we've fully formed what we're moving towards? I can tell you that it's not by forcing ourselves to like what's happened. You don't have to like it, but it is about making space for the reality, for the truth. It's about building the psychological flexibility to hold these seemingly contradictory and opposing thoughts and feelings, the recognition of what's lost and what that means for you and the feelings it brings, and holding it with, hopefully, some recognition that you're moving towards a new evolution of yourself. But it does begin with that acknowledgement, saying what's true without adding any story. It's, I can't live right now. And it's, you know, making sure that I don't make a story out of that as to what it says about me and my character. It's not, I can't live right now because I'm a failure. It's not, I can't live right now because I'm too old. It's none of those things. It is just, I can't lift. And maybe that's right now. It's just the truth. And then we need to work towards permission, giving ourselves permission to feel sad, frustrated. And it's already happened since I made this decision, because I follow lots of social media accounts about lifting and all that kind of stuff. And so what's happened is when that's come across my feed, you know, I've had a bit of a twinge, a bit of an uncomfortable feeling, a bit sad, a bit angry even. And it's been about giving myself permission to feel that, permission not to rush the next thing. But it is helped. Acceptance is helped along by renegotiating my values and taking values-based action. So if strength once came from lifting, where else can I find it? If community, where we're all working towards our individual goals but cheering each other on, if that was something that I got, where else can I find it? If purpose came from productivity, what gives life meaning now? That's where new possibilities start breathing. One of the things that I hang on to is that in my perimenopausal journey, with the cognitive impacts that I was experiencing, I had been doing a lot of court expert work as a clinical and forensic psychologist. It was very much a part of my identity that I worked at the pointy end of psychology and the high level of accountability and scrutiny level. And while I was not, you know, doing cartwheels when I had to go to court with such, you know, wasn't feeling fabulous and excited, I did an okay job many, 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 many times. It was part of my identity. And it was also work that used a part of my brain that just thrived on that kind of work. I just loved it. But when the cognitive elements kind of kicked in, it became, of perimenopause that is, it became really, really difficult for me to do that well, to do that efficiently. And it was something that I had to let go of. And at the time, that was a big loss to who I was, how I saw myself professionally. Like, it wasn't fun. It wasn't fun because I had to stop doing that work, and it wasn't fun because of the reasons I had to stop doing that work. It felt fucking unfair, to be blunt. But now that I can say generally my cognitive functioning has improved markedly, maybe I'm not as sharp as I was at 35, but definitely I can feel that the brain fog's lifted. I can still have word finding issues. Anyone who talks with me or listens to me will know that that pops up, particularly my clients. And I can still at times have memory issues. But what has returned is my capacity for analysis, my capacity for pattern finding, dot joining, a whole bunch of things that I really loved and that were skills and capacities that I used as a court expert that I'm now using to make sense of things in the menopause space. And so for me, having gone through this phase of not being able to do something that really defined who I was and really, you know, my brain really liked that type of work, to then not being able to do that and being sad and angry and confused about what it meant and what my career would look like, to then allowing all of those feelings there to be there and to kind of step into a void of not knowing what my next step was, which was terrifying because I've never known what my next step was in my career. What happened was, stepping into the void enabled me to find this next purpose, this next professional purpose and personal purpose, really. And that is moving into this space. working in the perimenopause and menopause space, which is deeply, deeply fulfilling and enables me to use my brain in the old way, but with a lot less stress, that's for sure. And it feels ridiculously meaningful, just like that court expert work used to feel. I don't think I would have found this unless I was prepared to feel the feels, the shitty ones, unless I was prepared to step into this kind of unknown void that I mentioned. I'm really glad I did. And so, you know, lifting heavy weights is a different version of the same thing. It's probably not, well, no, it is. I was going to say it's probably not as significant as my career stuff. It is because it's not about lifting. It's about everything that it gave me and everything that it meant to me and everything that I believed it said about me. All those things are. And so here I am again, going through it again. And when I think, and I have been thinking about this kind of shift in focus in my career and trying to really learn from it or remind myself what I learned from it, the other thing, not just the acceptance of the range of emotions, the good, the bad, the in-between, not just the understanding that there's always this liminal space of not knowing where the hell I'm going, not just that, but also self-compassion. That's the other thing that I really had to show myself back when I changed my career and when I experienced when I was struggling to do that type of work. I had to show myself lots of self-compassion. And when I made the decision not to return to it, that took self-compassion. And, you know, it's something that women aren't so great at. We often have oodles of compassion for others, but we're usually pretty critical of ourselves. And transitions are a really, really great time for our critic to show up. You should have managed this better. You're letting yourself go. You're giving up. You're being dramatic. It's not that bad. You used to cope fine. You're only 51. These are all the things that I have caught myself fleetingly thinking are not helpful, and there's no evidence of self-compassion in them whatsoever. That voice belongs to that old prior version, that prior identity who's fighting its own death, shall we say. I know that's very kind of existential, but that part of my identity doesn't want to be forgotten, so it's fighting against it by engaging in all this crazy, very critical self-talk. But just as I said before, it's about taking that version of me, that prior version of me, forward. And in terms of when we think about being compassionate, we need to find a way to move beyond feeling threatened, feeling fierce, feeling shame, being self-critical. We also need to move beyond the striving, the fixing and achieving. And that is one of the things that I really had to, I felt like I almost had no choice but to stop when my career stuff was going on. Because I kept trying to think, what's my next step? If I can't do court expert work, what's my next step? What's my next step? What's my next step? And it was actually keeping me stuck. I needed to relinquish that. I needed to surrender and, as I said, step into the void. And it was in the void that I was able to find what my next step was. And I needed to remind myself and have other people remind me. And I actively asked for these reminders that I was going to be okay, that even with this change and even with this not knowing, I was going to be okay. Practicing hearing their compassion activated my own self-compassion system, that soothed system that felt safe. It enabled me to kind of notice the tricky feelings, but also soften towards those tricky feelings, to acknowledge that they were hard, to acknowledge that it made sense that they were hard. But it also enabled me to create and have a lot more patience for myself. And if there's one thing that my whole perimenopause experience has consistently, or the one theme that's consistently shown up, one of many, but one is patience. And that steadied and is also now steadying my nervous system so that I can actually move closer and closer to accepting what's going on for me. But ultimately, grieving isn't about erasing the past. It is about weaving it into the present. So I can still love those parts of me that existed whilst acknowledging that that's part of my history and part of what's made me me, even if it's not a part that I'm expressing and acting on right now. So it's about forming a new relationship with who we were. She's still a part of me. She just has a different role in my story now. So when that grief comes up, and it's really very rare for it to come up for me in terms of my forensic and court expert work, but when it comes up in terms of missing the community, missing the feeling of lifting heavy, missing the knowledge of getting stronger, missing the progress that was really cool, progress that was about kilos, but not kilos I lost, kilos I could lift. That was super cool. When that comes up, when those losses come up, I'm going to name what's lost, name what it gave me, and then allow space to see in terms of how to get some of that good feeling, some of those good feelings again in my life. That's the pivot, but it is first stepping into the void. So it's about translating some of the things that those things gave me and finding other ways. So if lifting met my needs for strength and discipline, community and progress, I'm going to look for where I can find those things. I've already found them in my crazy burlesque dancing, which some of you might know I only started at the beginning of last year, never having been a dancer. And I can see how I've progressed. And the community of women is crazy and I love them so much. So I'm going to continue to do that. And yeah, I'll find other things to challenge me and other ways to get a sense of progress, gentle progress, not striving progress. Different activities, but with some of the same essence. But if we zoom out, let's zoom back out again. This whole stage is about translation. It's the physical shift mirrors a psychological one, moving from doing to being, from proving to knowing. It's a transition from external validation to internal authority. And like any rite of passage, it requires death and rebirth. Old identities die. We stay in this liminal space as new ones gestate. Grief marks the endings. Acceptance prepares the soul. And compassion waters whatever's trying to grow. I know that sounds really wanky, but I think it's spot on. And it's why you can't bypass this stage. It's why you can't kind of positive think your way out of it. This is no toxic positivity kind of stuff. Not into that. It's biology and psychology teaming up to help you move towards this version of you that brings all versions of you forward and allows growth in new areas. But the pivot, the what now, doesn't need to be dramatic. It just might start with curiosity. And this is one thing that I again notice in the therapy room is women are really reluctant to try stuff. And the reason they seem to be reluctant to try stuff is because they have the belief that the next thing they try has to be the right thing. And by that, I often see what they often mean is the next thing I try, I have to love. And that's risky, right? So they may not love it. And that belief then paralyzes them. So they don't try things. So we want to try things with curiosity. I have an idea that X, Y, and Z might feel good. I might enjoy it. I might meet new people that I like. Whatever, there's a curiosity and an attitude of experimentation. And if I don't, it's okay. All of the crumbs that we follow in our life give us information. about who we are and what we like now. Because we might have liked something 10 years ago that we don't like now, or we might not have liked something 10 years ago that we do like now. So we begin with curiosity. What feels good? What do I think will feel good to my body now? What will bring a sense of aliveness? What challenge can I sink my teeth into? What kind of people or who do I want to be around? Follow those clues, because tiny pivots stacked over time rebuild a life that fits this emerging version of yourself. And you'll notice that grief and acceptance keep looping back again and again. They're not chapters. They go hand in hand. They're companions. They're companions for life, really. I hate to break it to you. Each loss teaches you how to live more truthfully, and each acceptance clears space for something new. So I shall allow this space of having said, I have to leave, I have to stop this thing that was a part of my life, a very regular part of my life, a big part of my identity. And I have some ideas of where I may or what I may pursue, and I'll give them a crack and I'll see. And hopefully they fulfill me. They provide me with the challenge and the fun and the meaning and the sense of progress and strength. But I'll experiment, because that's what it's about. It's how you find out, how I will find out what works for this current version of me, who also probably will have morphed into a different version of me in 5, 10 years' time. I mean, this just keeps happening in our lives. It's just that perimenopause and menopause mark a really significant shift, just like adolescence. And for those who've become mums, that's another significant, where there's lots and lots of change over long periods of time. Now, in closing up this podcast episode, if you're in this in-between place, this liminal space, tired, unsure, grieving the woman you were, can I just reassure you, you're not broken? You're really not. I know you feel it, but you're actually in motion. You're letting go of an old version of you, a prior version of you, and it's going to feel raw. Let yourself grieve, let yourself rest. And when you're ready, pivot gently and curiously towards what's next. Because what matters to you now and how you take action that aligns with that is going to look different to what it did. And I know it's hard, but it's okay. And you can and will find meaning and fulfillment in that if you allow yourself to move forward and to bring the history of the woman you were with you. So maybe the work of midlife for me isn't about lifting heavier, it's about lifting wiser and doing that with tenderness and some curiosity, a bit of foot stomping. I'll be truthful in that. Yeah, a bit of foot stomping and some tears. But I shall try and do that with grace and, I guess, a degree of, maybe excitement's too strong a word, but some degree of anticipation for what might show up next for me and for the woman I'm becoming. And I hope you can show some tenderness and curiosity and some grace for the woman you were and for the woman you're becoming as well. Thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. I'd love feedback on what stood out for you in this episode. And if it really spoke to you and you think that there's someone it would be helpful for, or someone who would just be interested to hear this conversation that I've had with you, please share it with them. I really, really would love for you to do that. Particularly if you or they are sitting in their own in-between or feeling the loss and grief quite profoundly right now. I will talk about the other types of grief as well, because they are very much a part of the menopausal transition. But for now, we're just talking about this bit. You can find more conversations and resources at the All About Her Centre website. And if something kind of, I guess, stirred up something for you, then I guess that means you're alive and stuff is going on and you're shifting and evolving. Let me know. I'd love to hear. See you next time. You've been listening to Midlife Bites. If you liked what you heard, hit follow so you don't miss an episode. And if you have a minute, please leave a review. It really helps other women find the show. If you want to share your experience of the midlife bite, or you're an expert who can speak to the delights of it, please email me at kirsten@allabouthercentre.com.au and I'll be in touch. You can also head to our website, allabouthercentre.com.au, to find a practitioner who can support you through midlife. Or if you're a therapist, check out what's included in our health professional membership. We'd love to have you on board. Either way, remember, midlife isn't here to break you, it's here to remake you.